The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across the world in America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, the president in Louisiana promoting energy independence and the energy infrastructure.
You've got a choice of jobs. If you don't like what you're doing, you got to want to wake up. I do. Despite all of the stuff that we go through, and despite being in the swamp of Washington, and it is a swamp, but we are knocking the hell out of the swamp creatures, as we call them. We're knocking the hell. They've never had a time like this. They say, what the hell is going on?
Not a lot of trade talk going on yesterday, as both sides seem to be pretty quiet on it. Both sides worried, obviously, that any remarks that they make could affect the stock market in a negative way. The president, as we on Monday night, started saying he is optimistic that we will get a trade deal done in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And that's what tempered the stock market yesterday, was the fact that there wasn't any heavy rhetoric. The president not saying, for example, that coming this Friday, we're going to make sure we enact all the $300 billion in tariffs. Mm. Interesting. Couple of articles that just caught my attention here, because both really bring up some of the things that we have talked about. The one, Nathaniel Taplin from the Wall Street Journal, China could lose face, but get rich from the trade deal. And he talks about in this article here that China's no longer as cheap as it was to do business. That as you have a growing middle class, as you have a government that has to be responsive to a growing middle class, you have more regulations. For example, on pollution, environment, things like that. That is now affecting industries. Now that you have a huge middle class, wages are going up. And as he is stating, it's getting to the point with China where the growth rate that they have is not going to be that great, because costs are now moving up. Labor is not as cheap, because as you move in to a middle class, labor naturally goes up. We've talked about Mexico and how labor in Mexico even has gone up over the years. But when you have more regulation, which China didn't used to have, you didn't need to have it. But when you have a huge middle class that acquires wealth and is allowed to own some property, that's the natural progression of when you start allowing some capitalism into a socialist communist system, that people get money, they get wealth, and then they start demanding things from their government, and the government has to be responsive to it, whether you're a communist government or whatever. If you have a society that is in abject poverty, where you provide them everything, where there is no freedom and no acquisition of wealth, it's easier to keep that type of population under control.
Sure.
And it's just a different story. So he brings that up. I might have gone into more specifics than Mr. Taplin did, but he brings that up. But at the end of it, the article is China could lose face but get rich from a trade deal. What we have said, what we said yesterday, the one thing that isn't talked about at all, and I'm glad, because this is the only other person I've seen talk about this, and we've brought it up on the last couple of shows, is one thing that's lost in this entire argument, that is, if this free trade deal goes through, it's one of the greatest things that the United States, through President Trump, has ever done for the hundreds of millions of hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of millions of people in China. And as he writes, ironically, China's best hope to keep growing rapidly might be a trade deal featuring exactly the sort of competition-boosting reforms that the Trump administration is asking for: a fairer, wider playing field for private capital and toothier intellectual property enforcement. That would help. That would also help preserve Chinese access to Western markets and technical expertise. Chinese nationalists may disagree. In the long run, though, a deal forcing real change might help, not hinder, the Chinese rejuvenation, as you of I said, of course it will. That's mm-hmm. a natural progression of capitalism.
Yes.
Their growth, when you have a central government trying to organize an economy, you bring some capitalism in to a country of abject poverty, you're going to have extreme rapid growth for the first couple of decades. Mm. Yeah. It will start slowing down. And that's where many believe China is at this point. And of course, they're going to get to that point, whether they're at it now, in 5 years or 10 years, I can't tell you. But the fact is they will get there like every society who decides to become a capitalist society gets to, where then you need to be responsive, especially in a communist government that has not been responsive. You have to be responsive to the people who garner influence through wealth.
Right.
That's just the reality of it.
Yep.
The other thing I wanted to bring up is when we talk about what's going on in the actual negotiations and some of the confusion. And there was another article in the Journal, Robert Zolnick, and he is a former World Bank president and a former U.S. Trade Representative and Deputy Secretary of State. And what he has said is, and this actually makes some really good sense, because it's some of the things that you and I have talked about. It's talked about the things that Americans really want from China. Americans object to China's lack of, where is it here? Oh, let me get it. Okay. The U.S. wants China to lower tariffs, protect intellectual property, and stop forced transfers of technology, ban currency manipulation, equalize business and investment opportunities. Second, the U.S. worries that China's state capitalism creates unfair competition. This complaint extends beyond subsidies. Many Americans believe that the whole system of state direction by the Communist Party conflicts with the model of market economies, which it does. And then it goes on to a few of the other things that they want. And then he gets to the point, but Mr. Trump is focused on the U.S. trade deficit with China. His tariffs are a mismatch with the six complaints. A single effort or trade war won't remake U.S.-Chinese relations. If it means avoiding escalating tariffs, most U.S. businesses would be content with gains on the first issue of market access, some discipline on subsidies, and better intellectual property protection. American farmers want China to purchase their grains and meats. And now I disagree with him on, for example, that I believe that that's what the negotiations are actually doing. The actual negotiations with China are doing exactly what Mr. Zolnick is saying. They are. It's about everything that the U.S. businesses want, which is market access, mm-hmm. which is, you know, some discipline on subsidies. They lower their subsidies, give the Americans, you have to lower the subsidies to give American companies access, better intellectual property protection, and American farmers want China to purchase their grains and meats. Mm-hmm. And really, that's, if you look at that, that's really what America wants. Trump is focused in his speeches on, as we got a call yesterday, well known, Trump is going to totally equalize the trade deficit. That's not the actual complaints that America has. That's a political complaint. That's not a business complaint or even a consumer complaint in America.
Right.
And so what we have said is this is the huge disconnect. The negotiations going on are not about reducing the trade deficit. Trump's out there screaming about the trade deficit again over the last couple of days and how we're losing. Well, his actual people that are working for him putting together a trade deal, have you seen any story that the U.S. wants to put massive tariffs on to level out the trade deficit with China?
No.
Doesn't exist. So what he is out there every day promoting is not actually what's being done in the actual trade deal.
Well, and, you know, we recently talked about polls and how we would have a qualification standard in for the respondents of any given poll, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to take a poll on trade, there's a very populist attitude I would say it's probably in at least a great plurality, if not the majority of Americans. If you were to go just man on the street approach, hey, do you think we buy too many things from China? That which is a populist, it's a loaded question.
And it would be yes.
And the answer would be yes, time and time again. And I'm convinced it would be the majority of people saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get in, you get down to, well, let's back that up and let's now talk about individuals, these individuals who were respondents that said yes. How many of them use their dollar that way, vote with their dollar every day, but use their dollar that way, and that they're diligent about only buying American goods. The point being is that politically you can get away with it, saying we're buying too many things from China. They need to buy more from us. Yay, yay, yay. You'll get that. But it doesn't, the deal itself, the agreement, and the mission of getting an agreement is not about that. The details are we're going to enforce intellectual property rights.
Right.
And if we get them to buy a few, American-made things, great, but it's not going to be a balance. It is not going to be this. It is not going to be the populist approach.
I can't tell you how many Trump supporters I meet who believe that the negotiation is to limit that the negotiations going on with China are to limit China's access to American markets.
Right.
And that's not the case, but I understand why they think that way, because the president's out there promoting it, and that's actually not what's happening in the deal.
Well, and again, it's one of those things where it doesn't fail politically, because it's the populist idea. You say it and people cheer it on, but that's not the point of these negotiations at all. It's not. And we'll wait and see what the deal is when it's done, and see where it comes out. Look, if they get nothing else done, but they're able to enforce intellectual property rights, I'm good.
And well, enforce intellectual property rights and also open up markets. I believe you have to do. China, now they're hurting themselves, as we've talked about. Growth, and that one of the columns in the Wall Street Journal brings that up. They're going to hurt their growth by putting the subsidies on, by believing that the central government can run an economy.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they're going to fail. That will hurt their growth rate. That if they want the growth rate long term for the future, that will be through the roof,
mm-hmm.
and will eventually surpass the United States big time, just because of the population that they have and the consumer market that they have there.
Right.
They can do it much sooner if they sign this trade deal that Trump is putting forward. If that's the entire thing that Trump would never go out and promote. But the reality is, if China signs the trade deal that the United States and his representatives have put together, China's growth rate long term will be much faster than if they don't sign the trade deal.
Yeah, and I think that's a given. I didn't mention that because it's a given. That's the fundamental purpose of having a trade deal with China, is opening up those markets. Right.
And ours would grow too.
Mm-hmm. And I think, again... You know, we've talked about the president, in terms of the economy, GDP, unemployment, all these indicators, with the exception of the stock market, which can rebound in a matter of days. Everything right now looks positive. Everything looks great. If you get a deal done with China by the end of summer, no telling what the third and fourth quarter will look like. If you get the tariffs gone and, you know, you're working on steel and aluminum, but assuming nothing really changes with NAFTA, because we're likely not going to see USMCA get dealt with on Capitol Hill, you get the markets, you get companies, industry in America confident that those trade routes are going to be reestablished and are going to stay that way for a long time, then there's no telling what those numbers will look like.
You know what I fear the most? That China and the United States will make a deal, but Congress will not pass that deal.
Just to spite the president.
Just to spite the president. Mm-hmm. And then China will say, well, until your Congress votes to approve it, we're not going to abide by the deal whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And then the tariffs will continue all the way through the 2020 election because the president will say, look, we have a deal. Our trade representatives are willing to follow it. You need to be willing to follow it. And China says, nope, not until your Congress does it. And then tariffs stay on and the economy is not. That's what I fear the most, that actually a deal is done that Congress won't pass. That could be more damaging to the president.
Yeah, it could be. I haven't heard any talk about that at all, addressing any of that, but that could only be because that might just be because we're not to that point yet.
Right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Road check is a critical aspect of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance's strategy for keeping our highways safe. This year, the Inspection Blitz will take place June 4th through the 6th and will focus on steering and suspension systems. Start preparing for road check now with the following safety tips. Make sure you have no visible fluid leaks anywhere in the steering system. Inspect suspension components such as U-bolts, airbags, and mounting, springs, and all suspension mounting hardware. Lastly, listen for any air leaks in the air ride suspension. Take your road check prep one step further. Stop into a participating TA truck service May 1st through June 6th for a free mid-trip inspection to help avoid being placed out of service.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio, he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, Mark Cuban says he still might be open for running for president. We'll actually hear some of the audio of him stating that yesterday on CNBC. And also, what kind of farmer's bailout is this going to be? The Agriculture Department already making it known that the president, remember the president came out and said, okay, we'll buy all the food from the farmers and then we'll give it to countries around the world. Agriculture Department said, well, there may be a little bit of that, but that's not going to be the plan because the last thing we're going to do is disrupt other commercial markets.
Right.
So we're not going to do that. So what the plan is going to be, the president seemed to have backed off of that as of yesterday, saying, well, we're still trying to devise what the plan is going to be. Chuck Grassley not pleased by it. Most farmers are saying what the president doesn't seem to understand. Even though they still back what he's trying to do with China, but they're saying the longer this goes on, the more we're out of these markets. You can make up for some of the losses that we're making now,
right.
But the fact is we're out of the supply chain. It took us decades to get into the supply chain.
So, yeah, reestablishing, the longer it takes to reestablish those trade routes, the worse off they'll be. Because at some point, new routes have to be established. New sources have to be established. And if it's a decent deal, look, American producers are top notch and there's reason to reestablish these routes. But at some point, if you don't have trust in the American government, any of those foreign trade partners are looking at it going, well, we're just going to have to rely on sources that we can trust. That's what happened with when they were talking USMCA, when all those tariffs went into effect, and they were talking about especially the pork industry. Well, Mexico was saying, we'll just have to establish a new relationship with other nations, including Canada. So we don't have to do business with America. When you tell that to that industry, the farming industry, farming and ranching industry, when they hear that, they know. That door closes for good, they're doomed. So a deal has to be done. It has to be done very quickly, but I don't expect it to be done before the end of June.
Young, fresh, hip, and cool. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on the new Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So we had talked about Mark Cuban the other day that Mark Cuban has talked about running for president in the past, mm-hmm. and would he run for president?
Right.
Is one of the things that we've talked about, and how would you run as a Republican? Would you run as an independent? Would you run as a Democrat? Well, he was asked that on CNBC if he's still up for running for president of the United States. Here's part of that interview.
Are you going to run for president?
You haven't heard anything from me for a reason, and we'll keep it that way.
So you're still considering it?
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Look, I've said it many times. It would take the perfect storm for me to do it. You know, the definition of bad parenting is running for president when you have three young kids, 9, 12, and 15. So there's some things that could open the door, but, you know, I'm not projecting or predicting it right now.
Who do you think on the Democratic side right now has the best chance against President Trump?
Nobody right now. I think what people are missing is, you know, if you look at why people voted for Donald Trump, in my opinion, it was because he was, first and foremost, it was because he wasn't a politician. And look, you know, if you look at the Democratic field, it's all politicians. And politicians are the least trusted of every profession. And so, you know, it's too early to tell. There's nobody that really stands out, even though Biden's leading the polls. I like, you know, Vice President Biden. I think he's smart. I think he could do a decent job, but I think it's still way too early to tell. And, you know, I think there's a lot of change yet to come.
If you ran, would you run as a Democrat?
No, absolutely not. I'd run it as an independent, most likely.
And you think,
you know,
there's...
I still think there's a real opportunity for somebody who is, you know, in the middle, but has some charisma, has the ability to relate to both sides, but is not a politician. The reality is people don't trust politicians, period, end of story. You know, and we can talk about, you know, I'm not going to change anybody's mind. I don't want to try to change anybody's mind right now. But the reality is people don't trust politicians. And if you look at the Democrats right now, it's hard to look at the proposals that they're making and think that they're any more than they're just as headline porn to get attention. I don't think anybody looks at, you know, the proposals and says, look, yeah, we're going to introduce these taxes and that trickle down. Look, I think trickle down economics is a failure. I think trickle down taxation is just as big a failure. I don't think either one works. And right now, what I'm hearing from the Democrats is all about trickle down taxation. I think that's a failing proposition. And I don't even think they believe that what they're proposing is passable.
Hmm. All right.
Here's one thing that I think Cuban has wrong. Trump didn't win just because he wasn't a politician. That was part of it. But he won because he was a politician who didn't sound like a politician and who had specific issues. Mark Cuban is thinking, okay, I can run because I'm not a politician, and that's what people are looking for. But they're looking for a non-politician who isn't Donald Trump, who does things differently, who is more in the middle, who does not like trickle-down economics or trickle-down taxation. He has said nothing.
Right.
If you listen to that, Cuban sounded like a politician.
Yeah.
In that interview, that's the first thing that I noticed. He's saying, well, they don't want a politician. No, they don't. Number one, maybe the Democrats want a politician right now because those are the only people that are in there, except for Yang.
Mm.
Andrew Yang is not a politician.
Mm-hmm.
They also want somebody.
Neither is Beto O'Rourke, apparently.
or no political experience.
Yeah, well,
which he has. But when you look at Cuban,
mm-hmm.
Trump won because Trump identified what the problems were.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I can be definitive on Cuban is I can tell you some of the things he's been against by what he's said on Bill Maher. I can't tell you what he would do. The only thing I know that he's done, that he has promoted, that has stuck, I think, in the public's mindset, is when he came out and said there's a college bubble. And that we should limit what kids can borrow for college. I think it was $10,000 a year, a total of $40,000. That was it. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the first when we talked about the college bubble and compared it to the housing bubble, said, well, you know, look, this is what's going on. By the way, why did he say that he would never absolutely I wouldn't run as a Democrat? He has said he would either run as an independent or a Republican in the past. Mm-hmm. He has said that. He would not run as a Democrat. Why? He wouldn't get past step one. We played Beto O'Rourke. Beto O'Rourke has had to apologize for the appearance of being too elitist, for the appearance of being privileged, even though he is privileged, but he understands that he is privileged, and that's why he can do things for people that are not privileged. I mean, it's getting to the point of absurdity if you're running as a Democrat who is in Biden, who isn't being questioned on anything.
Right.
Cuban would be. Whether he would find any success as an independent, I don't know. Once you start taking positions, that's what matters. I don't know what it means. Nobody is able to explain to me what the opposite of trickle-down economics is.
Well, and again, it just gets back to what is it that he would want to do? What kind of policy does he believe is going to be best?
Those are nice political phrases, yeah. Mark, but they don't mean anything.
Yeah, that's and so you're going to have to in order. He says, I believe the American people want somebody who can relate to both sides. All right. Okay. Now let's talk about
hold it.
Now let's talk about where you stand politically. Now let's talk about what you want to do, because sorry, but you can say I'm in the middle. But at some point, you're going to have to discount the far left. You're going to have to discount the far right. And you'll do that through what? Talking about the ideas you want to believe in. And that's going to position you. You can call yourself an independent all day long. Bernie Sanders has done that.
Well, let's
officially.
Let's start out with this question for him.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand on illegal immigration? Specifically,
right.
What
right.
are the specifics? Not generalities, not that we need comprehensive immigration reform, because if you say that, then I immediately think you're just a politician.
Right.
Tell me specifically where you stand on illegal immigration.
And forget about the name trickle-down taxation.
Right.
Tell me what you want to do with taxes.
Right. And forget about the whole concept of trickle-down economics. Tell us what you think is wrong in the economic system. You, who just the other day said you are without question a capitalist, then what is trickle-down economics and how would you change it? Specifically, define trickle-down economics and define how you believe that it should be changed and what role the government should change in our economic system.
Right.
Be specific as possible.
Yep.
Because what I heard on CNBC from Mark Cuban was, I'm somebody who's not a politician. That's what America's looking for. But I'm sounding exactly like a politician, which is exactly why Donald Trump didn't win, because he wasn't a non-politician. That didn't hurt him, but he also did not sound like a politician, because he brought up specifically what he believed the problems were. And in order to confront what the problems are, you have to be blunt. As soon as you're blunt, a significant portion of the American population doesn't want to hear from you.
Right.
And you will be rejected as soon as you are blunt, because that's what you're stating, that we don't need politicians anymore. Well, you just, for 2 minutes and 25 seconds there, you sounded exactly like a politician, because that was politician speak from Mark Cuban.
And that's it. You will be defined by the ideas you believe in. You can say relates to both sides. Well, you're going to be defined by both sides, because you're going to, at some point, you're going to have to talk about the ideas. Unless you're Biden. Did you see Biden yesterday, over the weekend, actually? I think it was Sunday or Monday, where he was saying, I'm going to be giving a speech here soon. You've already been vice president. You should be able to give a speech and talk about what you believe, what you want to do anytime. At any moment.
You know, but that's where we get with the Democrats right now. With the Democrats, Biden is trying to figure. Biden isn't saying, look, I want to be president of the United States because here are the things that I believe. Biden is right now trying to figure out what he is supposed to believe to run as a Democrat presidential candidate against Donald Trump.
Right.
That's what it's about. What am I supposed to think?
And what am I supposed to say with when I'm running in a party right now? I am running to be the nominee for a party that more and more is going to call me out and is going to define me. They're going to call me out on anything that I say. He knows he can't win with the far left. On anything that he says, he's going to be hounded. So this is why it's taking all this time just to put a speech together. Because you're going to have to look like you appeal to everyone. And sorry, that doesn't work today. I would advise you not to give a speech. Keep waving, smiling, and be dismissive and hope that that works right for you, because that's your best bet.
But that, look, that's part of the, when we talk about politicians, though, that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if I announced for president, I'd be out every day speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
He announced. Why is he out every day speaking? Because
right.
He's trying to figure out where he has to stand in order to win. He's not telling you what he believes. He's not saying, these are my beliefs, and my beliefs relate to the American people. What he is thinking and what he's going through right now is the process with all of his aides and everybody around him telling him what he has to think, what he has to say, what he has to believe in order to get the Democratic nomination.
Yeah.
That's the reality of what's going on in the Democrat Party today.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, we had mentioned that we were going to talk about the White House trying to come up with a way to bail out the farmers, and we've got some response already. We shouldn't be subsidizing agriculture. And that's a, by the way, that's a great point that we have brought up, and subsidizing agriculture on an everyday basis. This subsidy is the concept, though, that the government is causing the problems with the farmers. That's why they get the bailout. Just under the concept of this subsidy is different than the subsidies of that the Agriculture Department give out that conservatives have been complaining about for the longest time that shouldn't be given out.
Right.
This is a different concept.
Mm-hmm.
This is because directly the U.S. government and the policies of the U.S. government are causing you the hardship. Now, you can look at it and say, but why should the taxpayer be paying for what's going on? Or why should future generations be paying for the problems caused by the U.S. government? That's what happens in trade wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I, again, coming from that industry, you're hearing what? There really is no bailout big enough to get us back to where we need to be.
Right.
You can't make plans based on a bailout. You make plans based on establishing a business, reestablishing the trade routes in this case. And that has to be done quickly. Because if the president is losing the farm belt politically, if the pain keeps on, if the tariffs remain in place, I don't know how you regain that. If we get through the majority of this year with having those tariffs in place, that will at some point be damaging politically for the president to an extent that may not be recoverable.
And also about the government purchasing the Agriculture Department stating that, okay, we may do a little bit of the government purchasing some of the products and delivering them worldwide, but they said that would not be a big project at all. That would be a very small part of the bailout because that would affect commercial markets worldwide, and the Agriculture Department is not going to do that.
Right.
So they still haven't come up with anything. They don't know what to do at this moment. They're trying to figure out what to do. The president has even said, I'm trying to devise a plan. But the farmers, whether it's Chuck Grassley from Iowa representing the farmers, is stating, you don't understand. You're saying that this is temporary bailout, but it doesn't open up the markets to us. It doesn't necessarily open up the markets if this thing isn't resolved very, very quickly.
Yes,
the trade routes.
Yes, it's the uncertainty, and it's the long-term business they're looking to solve.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across the world and America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He is Eric Harley. In the news today,
workers like you are lighting up our homes, powering our factories, and reducing energy costs for hardworking American families. You are not only making our nation wealthier, but you are making America safer by building a future of American energy independence. We are independent. We don't need anybody. This extraordinary turnaround is possible because under my administration, we have ended the war on American energy and we have ended the economic assault on our wonderful energy workers, and you are under assault. I don't know what the hell happened to Biden. What happened to him? I'm looking. I said, that doesn't look like the guy I knew. What happened to him? And Bernie, you know, Bernie's crazy. Bernie's crazy. But Bernie's got a lot more energy than Biden, so you never know. So it's going to be one of these people. Pocahontas, I think, is probably out. Boy, you got some beauties there. 350 million people, and that's the best we can do. You've got a choice of jobs. If you don't like what you're doing, you got to want to wake up. I do. Despite all of the stuff that we go through, and despite being in the swamp of Washington, and it is a swamp, but we are knocking the hell out of the swamp creatures, as we call them. We're knocking the hell. They've never had a time like this. They say, what the hell is going on?
He was on a roll.
Okay. Now, compare that to Beto. But what is the difference, right? You heard substance in there, right? Energy and the workers in the energy sector. But the president as a candidate was out doing what? Yeah, there's a lot of the Trumpisms that come along with it. But at the heart of it, what was going on? He was identifying key problems, key issues. Mm-hmm. Where is that on the left?
Well, I mean, I like that you, because if you've been listening to the show, you know that about an hour and a half ago, we were talking about Beto O'Rourke retooling, reintroducing himself, and went on The View and basically apologizing, not on anything of substance. Mm-hmm. Say what you want about, as you said, say what you want about Trump, but in there, there was a lot of entertaining talk. He was going after his opponents in the way that he does it, but he's also talking about actual substance of energy infrastructure jobs and the kind of energy infrastructure jobs that don't put a burden on the federal government,
right?
That actually provide incredibly great jobs for average Americans, and so that is a huge issue. Beto O'Rourke was apologizing for being privileged.
Yes.
And apologizing for his what magazine was he on?
Vanity Fair
magazine, mm-hmm. because the picture made him the perception of the picture was that he was a elitist, and then saying that he was born to be president. Well, then he had to decide that no, of all the 320 million Americans, he was the least to be born to be president of the United. I mean, it was just when I'm so glad you brought that up, because when you compare the two speeches, you see the difference between the two parties.
Yes.
Could you imagine Trump getting on and saying, I apologize for the way that I've raised Barron, because he had to apologize, you know, O'Rourke had to apologize for his wife, or because he said, well, sometimes I'm, you know, around, mm-hmm. you know, to help raise the kids, whatever.
Right.
Imagine Trump, he wouldn't, a Republican really wouldn't even deal in those kind of things being thrown at them, be like, no, just, you know, leave me alone. Now, the one thing that the president really didn't bring up and didn't spend a lot of time, though, on was the trade war with China. It was a day yesterday where everybody just sort of went into their respective corners and said, okay, let's just take a break on it for a little bit. U.S. stock futures higher again today. The market looking at economic data and new corporate earnings, according to CNBC. The Dow saw its best trading day in a month on Tuesday as investors put aside concerns over the ongoing trade war between the U.S. and China. As we ended yesterday's show, we said, look, the president on Monday night softened his tone, and as they write, he softened his tone on the trade war, referring to it as a little squabble, insisting talks had not collapsed and that something is going to, you know, come here in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Well, that's what, because you have to ask yourself, do you believe there's not going to be a deal done? And the market clearly does believe that there will be. And that's it. They don't know what it will look like. But right now, there's no need to panic. And that's what we were seeing yesterday. And that improvement basically on corporate earnings.
And remember, though, coming up Friday, the U.S. president is right here from CNBC, has until midnight Friday to decide whether to impose car tariffs on Europe because of our trade dispute. Mm-hmm. Now, many people believe that that's, as CNBC calls it, the Trojan horse. Mm. He really doesn't want to do anything on cars. What he wants is more access to American farmers in Europe. That this right. is really a farming thing. But if you did that on Friday, see, here's the point. If you're just having it, we for example, were looking at the numbers out there that if you have a trade war with China, how much would that be? You know, what would that be percentage wise of the GDP? And it's around 0.5% a year, which means that the GDP was going to be around 3%. This, we got these figures from the Wall Street Journal, who got them from some of their economists, who say, look, it's still hard to figure it out, but these are some of the rough guess projections, that it would be 0.5 percentage point, where if we're going to have 3% growth, we'd only have 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're going to have 2.5, it'd only be 2. If you start a trade war with Europe at the same time you have a trade war with China, then how would the markets look at it if it was a multi-pronged trade war?
Right.
Where you still have the tariffs and the uncertainty on the Canada and the Mexico free trade agreement, then you're putting tariffs on European products. Then in your, you know, the problems we're having right now with China, and then in 3 weeks that doesn't go away, or the president starts with the rhetoric. If he decides, let's put it this way: if the president decides to put tariffs on European auto parts and cars or whatever from Europe, and the stock market drops another 600 points.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes for a couple of days without saying anything, and then he rails off again on both Europe or whatever. If the president rails again and starts promoting tariffs are the way to go, and tariffs are beautiful and they're wonderful and they're a great option, where everybody knows that's not true,
mm-hmm.
what happens to the stock market at that point, especially when the investors in this country believe that there is now multi-pronged, there are multiple trade wars going on between Europe, China, still the disputes with the steel and aluminum tariffs with Canada and Mexico at that. So you're talking about our biggest trading partners. Talking about Europe and China and Canada, where, and Mexico, where we do what? Probably 80-85% of our trade with, mm-hmm. that if all of that is in dispute, remember now, that starts closing in on 20-25% of your entire GDP, your entire economy, which then ripples through the system.
Well, the difference here in that equation would be the what the market can price in based on comments and what they can price in based on action. And you would likely not see a reaction by the markets until
the action happens.
They knew that the actual tariffs were going into place.
It does seem like that is that the markets tend to ignore what the president says. It's what the president does.
Mm-hmm. If the four horsemen, as we called them, all came out, if you had Navarro and Larry Kudlow, Lighthizer, and Steve Mnuchin all coming out saying the same thing, saying, oh, no, we're going to have those tariffs put into place, then I think there would be a greater concern on the market that you'd start seeing that effect.
By the way, you coined the term the four horsemen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just so everybody knows. That came from Eric.
Yeah.
I think if the president's just tweeting it out, the tariffs are great, mm-hmm. maybe not.
Right.
We've seen the president's. It was about a month ago where the president said something, and you and I said nothing happened to the markets on Monday. Mm-hmm. It's like they don't believe him.
Right. No, the market believes right now a deal with China is going to get done.
I think they believe that too.
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yes.
When there is real reason to believe that it won't, then you'll see a turn. Until then, you can't really price that in because you can't predict this president and you really can't predict the situation. It's a unique situation that we are in with China. Because the mission really is to get them in line on intellectual property.
Intellectual property and subsidies.
Right.
And opening up their markets
to
the United States.
It's huge. I'll tell you, it doesn't get the... it doesn't really get its place in the echo chamber that is social media, but it really is huge. If this president solves that issue, it's going to mean big things, not just for the U.S. economy, but the global economy.
But you know something? I mean, that's a great point, you know, because we've been critical of the president for how he's been promoting it,
mm-hmm.
where he's making it believed to his supporters that this is about equalizing the trade imbalance when it is not. That's not what they're negotiating. Right. They're negotiating China bringing down the trade barriers. Mm-hmm. They're negotiating the intellectual property. They're negotiating the fact that a central government should not be running an economy. And as we pointed out yesterday, that if Trump gets this through, this would be one of the biggest long-term gifts ever given to China by an American president, because long-term it will help China, because China is getting to that point where their costs and their regulations and the responsiveness from the demands of the growing middle class of the government are starting to make it more expensive to produce in China, which why we've seen over the last few years, over the last 10 years, that things have been outsourced to other countries where, again, they're not as developed as China when it comes to the middle class. But they're saying that the problem that China has now is with, you don't see China really coming up with technical innovations. They
right.
may steal them. They may co-opt it, but they're not coming up with it themselves. And the fact is, when you have a central government running a economy which is going from manufacturing to high tech, as they're all going to, that China's going to run into huge problems. And the best thing, now they said they might not say face, but the fact is their economy would grow much faster over the long term if they took the United States deal, because the United States deal is not about limiting China's access to the American market. It's about opening up competition to their companies, which would actually, if people understand the way the free markets work, would actually help China in the long run, but cutting down the subsidies and making it so their middle class can actually buy their products, which then China, as we know, China, again, tried to manage her economy to be export only. The United States doesn't. We just say, okay, let it go. And we basically have two-thirds of our economy is based on domestic and one-third on exports, because that's naturally what happens. And that's what China should do, because China isn't taking advantage of the huge potential market, domestic market, that they have because they've been so focused on an export market. So, that at times Trump simplifies the argument and the impact of what the reality is of what it would be like. And I'm so glad you brought that up, Eric, the reality of what a trade deal with China would actually mean to the United States and China. It's mind-boggling. It really, it changes.
I think it's possible that a couple of decades down the road, if it's done right and it is truly accomplished, I think a couple of decades down the road, they may be looking back at that as a pivotal right. point for not just the economy in China, but the culture in China and the government rule in China, yes. but also the global economy and where there was a turning point.
Well, that's the other thing. If you do open it up more, then the central government loses control, which
yes.
moves China more away from a communist
and I think
government.
That's what they fear the most.
That's some of the
government.
The pull and tugging
right.
going on right now.
Yes. They don't want to change their laws.
Yeah. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The trade waters are pretty choppy once again between the U.S. and China. Looks like more Chinese tariffs coming on more U.S. food and ag products. And so once again,
we are in the middle of developing a mitigation program.
Undersecretary of Agriculture for Trade Ted McKinney telling visiting farm broadcasters in Washington that in this package,
you're going to see some new things and you'll see some traditional or some things like we did before.
He said direct farmer payments and market development programs will likely be in the package as they were the last time. Now, the president's been talking about maybe having the government buy up the crops and products that would have gone to China and using them for food aid in other countries.
Well, that's a very, very tall task with Jones Act and the experience that we've had. So I think that'll be a part of it, but it's not going to be the majority of that.
And besides,
we do not want to do anything that would hurt potential commercial sales.
So when is this mitigation package going to be revealed?
It's more like days, not weeks, months.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Hurley. You've got some breaking news.
Yeah, in the last half hour, the U.S. State Department has ordered all non-emergency staff to leave Iraq immediately amid growing tensions with Iran. This coming from the Wall Street Journal.
Wow.
And that is a big deal. Everybody's calling this John Bolton's war, right? That the president really doesn't agree. It's not a war, but there should be, I think, great concern. Iran is unpredictable. We know the things that their leadership has said over the years, but now you think about what they have done in supporting Hamas and what their goal is. There's no question. They want Israel gone, and they don't have a problem getting into a skirmish with the United States in order to accomplish that goal. If we are headed to a war with Iran, I tend to believe it's going to be a very long one or extremely short. They're either going to get it out of the way and Israel and the United States combined will take care of the problem once and for all, or it's going to be a back and forth where we walk on eggshells through the whole thing. And I suspect this president is not the commander-in-chief to walk on eggshells.
And I suspect we won't get to the war portion of it. Not that there might not be military attacks, but I don't think Iran is willing to go to the war with the United States. I believe what they're doing is testing the Trump administration.
I think they're doing that. I think they're also, to some extent, testing Israel. I think there is that...
Yes.
That ongoing test that there always has been,
Okay, the ongoing test then,
yes,
because
yes.
I think they'd be rather foolish to think that Israel is somehow going to back
stand
off.
Down, right?
Yeah,
and the U.S. may not need to get involved. Israel's very, very capable of defending themselves. Here is your forecast.
It's amazing that we're in mid-May and we're still talking snow. there's a low pressure area that's pulling out of the northeast into New Brunswick, Canada, but it'll drop rain today in portions from upstate New York into New Hampshire and Maine, and that won't all fall just as rain. We'll see up to 2 inches of snow from that system in that neck of the woods. We have a big weather maker taking shape in the west. Today we'll see showers associated with the system develop in Oregon, Washington, and Northern California. By late in the day today and into Thursday, that system will become more widespread to include most of the state of California. Then by Friday, the system will shift eastward to cover the Intermountain West, so a lot of rain headed that way. Things finally drying out after today along the Gulf Coast states. Dallas today, sunny 86 in Chicago, chance of showers 68. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Serving on so many levels. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's Eric, I'm Gary. We've got to bring up this story here because it's about 3 or 4 days old, but we need to get to it because we have talked about, and we've spent some time today talking about how the left and the Democrat Party has gone completely and totally off the rails. This is something that sent Alan Dershowitz, I think, if he ends up getting counseling, I wouldn't be surprised because he was so angry about it. Here's the headline here from a few days ago from the New York Times. Harvard's first black faculty deans let go amid uproar over Harvey Weinstein defense. Now this from the New York Times. Kate Taylor's column from the 11th. Harvard said on Saturday that a law professor who has represented Harvey Weinstein would not continue as a faculty dean of an undergraduate house after his term ends on June 30th, bowing to months of pressure from students. The professor, Robert Sullivan, and his wife, Stephanie Robinson, who is a lecturer at the law school, have been the faculty deans of Winthrop House, one of Harvard's residential houses for undergraduate students since 2009. They were the first African-American faculty deans in Harvard's history. Now, they are oppressors. Wow. When Mr. Sullivan joined the defense team of Mr. Weinstein, the Hollywood producer, in January, many students expressed dismay, saying that his decision to represent a person accused of abusing a woman disqualified Mr. Sullivan from serving as a role of support and mentorship to students. Mr. Weinstein is scheduled to go on trial in September in Manhattan on rape and related charges. As the protest continued, with graffiti aimed at Mr. Sullivan appearing on a university building, Harvard administrators said they would conduct what they call a, get this now, you ready for this? A climate review of Winthrop House. In recent weeks, tensions have escalated with the student sit-in and lawsuits sparked by a clash between one of the protest leaders and two Winthrop House staff members who were seen as supporting Mr. Sullivan. On Saturday, the dean of Harvard College sent an email to students and staff members at Winthrop House informing them he would not renew the appointments of Mr. Sullivan and Ms. Robinson as faculty deans after their term ends on June 30th. He said in his email the decision was informed by a number of considerations. Quote, over the last few weeks, students and staff have continued to communicate concerns about the climate at Winthrop House to the college. The concerns expressed have been serious and numerous, and actions have been taken to improve the climate have been ineffective, and a noticeable lack of faculty dean presence during critical moments has further deteriorated the climate in the house, that I've concluded that the situation in the house is untenable. In a statement, Mr. Sullivan and Ms. Robinson said, "We are surprised and dismayed by the action Harvard announced today. We believe the discussions we were having with high-level university representatives were progressing in a positive manner, but Harvard unilaterally ended those talks." So that's what started. I mean, they claim there are other complaints that the two two have experienced a workplace climate of hostility and suspicion. A junior who took a leading role in organizing the protest said Saturday afternoon she had not expected the college to act so definitively or so quickly. My honest reaction is just surprised, but in the best way. I'm very proud of our college today. Mr. Sullivan has represented other controversial clients, including Aaron Hernandez, former New England Patriots player, when he was tried for double murder, and the family of Usama Rahim, a man shot by Boston police who has been accused of being a terrorist. Mr. Sullivan also represented the family of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. But Weinstein, too much. Gotta go. You know, certain crimes, a defense attorney, does that mean that, in the Harvard Law School that there will be a climate review of the curriculum and that it will be a no-go or it will just be commonplace that there are certain crimes that a defense lawyer cannot represent a suspect on?
Well, I mean, that's basically what you're saying. We don't condone anyone being the defense lawyer for the most heinous of crimes, but we live in a society, a nation of laws, where defense lawyers often have to represent people who have committed heinous crimes. You're either a school of law or you're a school of only the laws that we like and dislike. I'm not condoning anything that Harvey Weinstein is accused of doing. That's not the point.
No, but
when you're a law school, you are educating young people who, many of them, will go on to become defense attorneys.
Well, I mean, isn't all of American jurisprudence based on the fact that you are innocent until proven guilty?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you deserve, haven't liberals for the longest time supported that concept?
Well, because
we have in our Constitution, if you can't afford a lawyer, one mm-hmm. will be appointed to you.
Well, and even if there is a plea, even if there is someone who is admitting their guilt to the most heinous of crimes, you are afforded a lawyer. Why? To make sure that the process is followed,
right?
Throughout that trial, throughout, well, any hearing or anywhere along the way, to make sure that your rights are protected. That's the way it works. You may not like it. You may think that defense attorneys are scum of the earth or whatever, but they are necessary in a lawful society.
Right. I have no idea what this couple's politics are. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Their politics doesn't matter in this case. Mr. Sullivan is Mr. Sullivan is a defense lawyer.
Yeah.
But what they're saying on Harvard is that you may only be a defense lawyer for the suspects that we agree with you being a defense lawyer for. And if you do not abide by that, that you are not welcome on this campus, that you must lose other positions. You must lose other positions that you hold based on the clients that you choose to represent as a defense lawyer. That's what sent Dershowitz going crazy.
Well, that's it.
Because I mean, that's the basis of being a defense lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And we know it's all happened. We know there are lawyers that defend people that we feel are guilty.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't, in our society, label those defense lawyers as evil people for defending those that we might even know are guilty, because we understand the process, and we understand the process may at some times be so transparent that you would say to yourself, why would anybody represent that person? But basically, that's what defense lawyers do. I mean, that's what you do. You go in to defend people, to represent them, because under our system, everybody deserves representation, irrespective of the heinous crime that they have committed. End of story.
Yeah.
I may dislike it, but I don't judge that lawyer for representing that client who I believe is guilty as committing the same crime as the person that he is representing.
I may take issue and have a debate with those lawyers about how they're defending, sometimes the points that they make, but that does not do away with the fact that I certainly respect the right of the individual
we don't have
that defense lawyer.
And we don't even know how Mr. Sullivan joining the team would have argued anything, because the trial is still months upon months upon months away. It's the fact that he just chose Mr. Weinstein to represent him that in itself was disqualification from the students from the campus.
When it could have been a terrific teaching opportunity, I think, for that, and learning opportunity for the students.
So,
think about that, because you do have to teach that side of it.
So just think about this here. Harvard's first black faculty deans. In Harvard's long history, the first. Now they are viewed as the oppressors. Think about that. When you just saying that. Harvard's first black faculty deans let go over the fact that one of them represented a client that the students didn't personally like, and didn't personally like the crime that he is accused of. Therefore, Harvard's first black faculty deans are now viewed as an oppressor. So Harvard's first black faculty deans are now an oppressor. Martina Navratilova is an oppressor just in the last couple of weeks. And the feminist lesbian who testified against the Democrats' Equality Act is now also an oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
And soon, Beto O'Rourke will be an oppressor.
I think he already is. I think that was the point of having him on The View.
After being on The View.
His walk of shame.
After being on The View yesterday.
I'm really horrible. Don't vote for me. You really shouldn't vote for me.
And that's why we didn't get to it here for the last couple of days. I had to get to it because it's just like it's amazing. And people that were viewed as victims are now the oppressors. So how do you judge anymore? What is the judgment standard? There is no judgment standard. It's whatever the judgment is at this minute on this day.
Yes.
And we just choose this person at this point to be an oppressor, and we are a victim.
And by the way, that same side right now, for the most part, is supporting a guy who has not broken the law, not abused anyone,
right,
but certainly has been creepy, and we've all seen it. We've seen actual pictures of it. So think about that. Think about that part of it. You have this going on at Harvard Law, and that same group is going to quite possibly make Joe Biden
well,
the nominee.
Well, let's be honest. The students at Harvard probably in all the 21 candidates haven't found a candidate socialist and communist enough to support yet.
Right, but their party is going to...
They're all,
right now, if it stands, their party's going to make a really creepy guy the nominee. Wow.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Freightliner Team Run Smart Pro Henry Albert has achieved some very impressive fuel mileage numbers. Henry shares the specs on his truck and his trailer, starting with what's under the hood.
I'm in a 2018 Cascadia Aero-X. It's powered by the integrated drivetrain Detroit Series 60 DD15, 400 horsepower, 1,750 foot-pounds of torque at 975 RPM, and that's fed into the Detroit DT12 direct drive transmission with a final axle ratio of 2.16 with active lube management, riding on Michelin X1 tires, pulling a fully aerodynamic trailer. The trailer is equipped with a nose cone. It's also equipped with full-length skirts from Fleet Engineers that go completely over the landing gear, completely over the trailer tandem, all the way to the rear bumper. The rain gutter has been plated over, and it's running a Stemco trailer tail. My main run, which is from Charlotte to Laredo, and I'm usually 60,000 to 65,000 pounds, I was averaging over 10 miles a gallon. It was up to 10.1.
To learn more about Henry's fuel mileage achievements, go to teamrunsmart.com. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Let's leave you with a smile on your face.
I don't know what the hell happened to Biden. What happened to him? I'm looking. I said, that doesn't look like the guy I knew. What happened to him? And Bernie, you know, Bernie's crazy. Bernie's crazy. But Bernie's got a lot more energy than Biden, so you never know.
No. Well, it's not going to be boring.
No.
That's for sure.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.